As the famous saying goes, if it don't grow in Sweden, don't you be eaten.
We do grow tomatoes, though. But they, you mean...
Yeah, Lucas, have you seen a wild tomato plant out in the Swedish woodlands? Have you seen one that grows without a greenhouse?
Well, have you seen the herring tree anywhere? No. No, you haven't.
The herring tree. I have. My mum's from the West Coast. She's got herring trees.
So it sounds like a book, The Herring Tree, and you're like, whoa, that's weird.
Yeah, it's like the Swedish version of a money tree. It's sort of the same thing. It's got the same value. Did anyone listen to the adult jazz performance?
Yes. Well, I already did.
Yeah, and you didn't tell us about it, so I'm a bit pissed off about that, to be honest with you.
What do you mean?
You listened to it, and then several days later you told us about it. I was expecting a midnight call to tell me about it.
I wasn't expecting a midnight call, but I've got different standards, apparently. So.
Well, it's adult bloody jazz. Okay, well, I'm just going to say it was fucking amazing. It was so good.
Yes.
I thought it was even really charming. How did you listen to it, Dora?
Yeah, I did. I was just waiting for you to finish.
I even thought it was quite charming how the interview was obviously like a very I think I've even heard his voice before, so I don't know if he's famous, but he was obviously wanting to know, you know, a lot of the kind of, he was asking about the different singing and all the rest of it, had like really technical questions. I think it was charming that the guy was just like, oh, well, I just kind of like singing in a really kind of female falsetto. And I was just like, oh, you are just so charming, aren't you? You just absolutely, they are just so like sincere. They're so
humble,
emotional, humble. Yeah, that's exactly right. And also I'd like to throw in the correction. They are from Leeds, not from Sheffield. That was my
I looked that up as well.
Well, you said Leeds in the last episode, I think.
I said Leeds, and then I changed to Sheffield. Okay. I'm changing from Sheffield back to Leeds. Okay. They are definitely from Leeds.
Should have stuck with your gut.
Let's see where they're from in the next episode.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. It could all change.
No, it was good.
Spotify have done this thing. I don't know if you've witnessed it on any of your albums, but they do these things. Oh, I forget what they're called, but they're like little experiences. So when they released, I told you about the Raconteurs released a new album last year or the year before, and they did this like, they did like a live show, which Spotify have a tendency of doing, at the Electric Lady in New York. So they had it there, but they were like interviews, and there were like film clips and everything like that. And it was like really, really well done. It was like a whole experience, and you sort of click through this kind of makeshift album, which is really, really, really well produced, with some of, it's like a montage of them talking and playing and all the rest of it. It was very good. I don't know if you witnessed that. And it comes up like a, you know, like an Instagram story on like the album. So you can kind of like click through it like a video.
Mm-hmm. The only band I've seen doing that is, for some reason, is Metallica. I know which feature you mean. It doesn't happen that often, but it's, when it does, it's very nice.
Lucas, have you had a semla today?
I did, yes.
Is it a special day there? Yeah. What day is it there?
It's Semmeldagen. You know those buns with whipped cream in them?
Yeah, they're filthy, they are.
Yeah, so I had something for the first time today.
Mm-hmm.
I had a semla from the coffee shop called Beck in Södermalm. The one with the...
Oh, I've been there. Have I been there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have. And I had it, which what it's called is semla on a hot wall.
Ah, just warm milk.
Varm veg. And what you do is you put the semla in a bowl, and then you pour warm milk in the bottom of it, and it gets like, it gets really, no. It's amazing. It is so good.
Yay!
It is so, 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 so good. I can never have a...
Is it just soggy?
I cannot have a...
bun.
No, but it's delicious, warm, soggy bun.
Oh, with God.
With whipped cream
and whatever it's called in English.
Mandelmasse. What's mandel? What's the almonds?
Almond mass.
Marzipan. Marzipan.
Ah, but it's not really marzipan though. But it's almost.
No, it's not.
It's more porous.
Yeah. Okay. Like the stuff in a Bakewell or something.
And this was homemade, so it had like big chunks of almonds in it. It was absolutely delicious. It was the best semla I've had in my life by far. And the guy said that as well when I bought it. He was like, "This is going to be the best one you've ever had." Trust me. And I was like, "Well, okay, all right, we'll see." And it was incredible. So I'm very happy.
Well, my experience wasn't even close as good.
What did you get? Did you get it from the supermarket?
No. Well, there's this fast food place in the same building as us, so you can order food on your phone and then go pick it up, and then it's which is really convenient. But they sold Samnor today, so I bought a 2-pack and had and gave one to my colleague.
Oh.
But it was in the middle of the work day, so I sat in front of my computer, and to make sure I didn't like. It didn't become really messy. I ate it with a fork and a knife.
Well, yeah, of course you do. You don't fucking eat it with your hands.
Well, I do that sometimes. But it was good. It was good. And I had one yesterday as well.
Oh, nice.
I've had so many.
Did either of you photograph this for Twitter?
Yes, I did. I did photograph
Brilliant.
It.
Brilliant.
I did photograph it.
Oh, I should have done that.
Well, it's pancake day here. Is that a coincidence?
Today?
No, it's not a coincidence. It's Fettistagen, which is a Christian end of Lent. Right?
Yeah. The third Tuesday of the month?
Well, I don't know. But yeah, it's for the same reasons.
Yeah, all right.
But here you eat semler. And there you eat boring old pancakes, which is boring as fuck compared to semler.
I mean, I like pancakes, no but semler, come on.
Did you eat pancakes?
Not yet. I'm having some for pudding. I'm having orange and whiskey and ice cream pancakes.
Sounds.
I didn't realize that was possible, but
it's gonna happen. It's gonna be flambéed.
How do you have your pancakes?
That sounds so fancy. Yeah.
How do you have your pancakes?
What do you mean?
Like, it's standard pancakes. If somebody says it's pancakes for dinner, what do you have with your pancakes? What's your preference for pancakes?
Are you talking to me now?
Yeah.
I'm talking to both of you. Like, what's your?
I know how you funny Swedes have them, and it's not the way we do it.
Well, funny Swedes have it with
jam.
With jam, and I'm not into it. So
what?
It's nice, but it's not as good as lemon and sugar.
I like to put ice cream on my pancakes when I'm feeling really naughty.
Naughty. Well, at least you don't flambé it.
Yeah. Well, we've got a bit of class over here. I'd normally go frozen berries, lemon juice, maple syrup.
Oh, that sounds pretty good. That sounds very good.
Yeah, I just go for drottningsylt.
That's Queen's jam. It's like a mix of what is it? It's like blackcurrant, strawberry, and raspberry or something.
I think it's blueberry and raspberry.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Maybe it's blueberry. I think you're right. I think it's blueberry and raspberry.
Do you have whipped cream with that, or is that not?
It's blueberry and raspberry, and yes, preferably whipped cream or ice cream,
okay.
Vanilla ice cream.
I'd also like to throw in the mix, which I'm not proud of, but seeing as nobody else brought it up, Nutella. I like a Nutella pancake. I
don't think I've ever had that before, actually.
Yeah, well, you can imagine. You know what Nutella tastes like?
Yeah, Nutella and banana.
Oh, banana. Nannies. Nannies and Nutellis.
Man,
yes.
Pancakes are way more versatile than I realized.
Yeah.
Oh, they are. You can have them with cheese as well. Like, they just cover every...
Like a crepe.
Yeah.
Right, crepes. Yeah, that's a whole other thing. Goddamn.
Have you had savory waffles? They're good.
Never
like,
had.
No.
You have, like, finely cut red onion,
mm-hmm.
Sour cream, gräddfil, and caviar.
I have had them.
And caviar, like not like Swedish caviar from a tube, but like like caviar.
Yeah, the actual eggs.
Wow.
Yeah,
the
actual eggs.
Well, yeah, I have had that. I just realized when you started talking about the onion and the caviar and stuff. Yes, it's very good.
Yeah, it's filth. It's absolute filth.
Can I talk about the herring?
Oh yeah, the herring. Yeah,
I want
go
to
on,
ask
those.
Your advice. So I ate the out of date herring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to the hospital.
No, decided it would be fine. It was about 5 days. It was a best before, so we went with it. Now, we had it in a way that you're probably not going to approve of. We had it on toast with
cooked. Oh, no, well, it's gone
wait,
wrong.
Wait, you had it just like toast as in just white bread?
We had sourdough toast with the herring on top, and then we had cooked tomatoes on top of that. All right.
Oh.
Now, it was all right, but it was very, very sweet, but also very salty. Is it supposed to be really sweet? I don't understand.
Well, depending on what herring you had, it can be quite sweet. Yeah, it can be quite sweet.
It was just called marinated herring, and it had lots of dill in it. Like, it was very dill heavy.
Oh, was it not like a Swedish herring? Was it like from the supermarket?
It was IKEA's. Oh.
I think that's probably matjessill then.
Oh, you think it was matjessill? Maybe.
I think it was.
I mean, it's not sweet, but I was the brine kind of like reddish almost.
Yeah, was it?
Yeah,
reddish?
It was. It was sort of pink. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, it's probably matjessill. Yeah.
So
matjessill is like it's the one that stands out. All the other ones are like in mustard or they're in onions or they're in like a creamy sauce, but matjessill has a really specific kind of flavor to it. Yeah. And the way that you're meant to eat it, Dora, not on toast and definitely not with tomatoes, is you're meant to have it with boiled new potatoes, summer potatoes,
right,
with dill, and then you're meant to have it with sour cream and chives.
Yeah.
My question really is, we've got another jar. And the other, it's just also out of date, which we've got to eat soon. But I was going to ask for your recommendations on how to eat it. But it's got carrot and onion in it.
Sounds like laksil.
Yeah.
So how would you, what should we do with it? We've got to eat it.
Same thing. That one I would also. That one you could have with waffles, savory waffles. Even it, that would work.
Is it creamy? The
sauce? No.
It's like laksil. Vinegary. I'm pretty sure it's laksil.
I mean, I sometimes I do actually have it on a sandwich, but I have it on knäckebröd. What is that in English?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, crisp.
You can do that.
So what I do, like, I boil potatoes, but I obviously don't want to put them on. So I let them cool. I just slice them up, like, almost like eggs, and then I put on the herring, and then sour cream, and then chive. And then also, if I'm feeling really fancy, I even have some eggs on there. But eggs are
on
optional.
On top of a crisp bread. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of it on top of a crisp bread.
Right.
You need to factor in that Lucas is from Dalarna.
He's northern. Isn't he?
Yeah, he's from a really, he's up from up there, and his sort of culture can kind of conflict with everybody else's.
It is the best way.
It sounds good, but you might just wake up wearing like really traditional, colorful robes and find yourself dancing around a maypole.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing at all.
Just watch out, at your own risk.
Right, now I'm going to try this boiled potato business. Okay, I'll report back.
The only thing...
we've got to eat it.
Don't... No tomatoes. That's...
No, that... I tell you what, that probably improved it, if anything, because it was too sweet.
Just boiled potatoes, sour cream, and chives.
Yeah, all right.
As the famous saying goes, if it doesn't grow in Sweden, don't you be eaten.
We do grow tomatoes, though. But they, you mean...
Yeah,
they
Lucas, have you seen a wild tomato plant out in the Swedish woodlands? Have you seen one that grows without a greenhouse?
Well, have you seen the herring tree anywhere? No. No, you haven't.
The herring tree. I have. My mum's from the West Coast. She's got herring trees.
So it sounds like a book, The Herring Tree. And you're like, whoa, that's this is weird.
Yeah, it's like the Swedish version of a money tree.
Yeah.
It's sort of the same thing. It's got the same value. We have a whole episode about bees. And
buzz, buzz, buzz.
I have, buzz, buzz, buzz. Oh, that's a really good Modern Lovers song.
Of course it is.
Yeah, and you know what? I've freaking done so much research, you guys. I had fun with this. I thought maybe I don't really know quite how to start it, because there's so much many misconceptions about bees. There's so much kind of facts about
and
bees.
And you're here to right all those wrongs. You're gonna set the record straight.
So I thought maybe I'd start out with you guys just telling me a little bit how you feel about bees, you know? How have they affected your life?
Well, I love honey.
Yeah? Yeah, do you? How do you consume your honey?
Well, sometimes when I'm feeling cheeky, I just grab a spoon and, you know.
Yeah, wow.
But usually, the usual way is in tea or yogurt and honey.
And
maybe some nuts. That's a good mix.
Any kind of particular kind of nut? Cashews, maybe? Could cashews work? That sounds quite good.
No, usually walnuts in that.
Okay, all right. He's a walnut kind of guy. Okay, all right. That's good to know. That's good to know. Dora, do you have any sort of relationship to bees you want to just how you...
I love bees.
I know.
They're kind of cute as well. They're like small little fluff balls. Just...
They are adorable. Yeah. And there's so many different types of bees as well.
Yeah.
Fluffy ones, non-fluffy ones.
I'm going to be completely honest with you and say that I realize that there are lots of different kinds of bees. I've sort of decided to stay away from that. So we're talking specifically about the honeybee.
Mm-hmm.
But there are other bees that produce...
Which are non-fluffy.
Yeah. As far as I know, they've got five eyes and they...
I love this. You're like... It's like you're in a test at school. You're like, five eyes and... they're not fluffy and...
Yeah, this is Aaron's bee test over Zoom.
Yeah. But it's a total misconception that all bees sting. It's a total misconception that all bees produce honey. So there are things like the
bomb.
You
say this, but I think the world is really getting a bit smarter about their bee facts. I think more people know more stuff than you give them credit for.
Yeah.
Well, here we are to give them even more facts to impress their friends. Because this is going to be one heck of an episode and we're so ready for it. Okay.
I mean, it's going to be a party trick, whipping out your bee facts and everyone's like, whoa, I didn't know that.
So I'm just going to pull out a fact right now. I'm going to say, just to show how important bees are, almost 90% of wild plants and 75% of leading global crops depend on animal pollination. One out of every three mouthfuls of food depends on pollinators.
Whoa.
That's mad. One in three depends on animals.
I know that we are fucked if the bees do.
Yeah, absolutely. We're totally fucked. Honeybees, interestingly enough, are the only insect that produces food consumed by humans as well. So they are totally linked to our history. Mead, which is made from honey, is the oldest alcoholic drink.
Oh my god, I forgot that you were super into mead. Is that still there?
Mead is nice.
I'm big time. Mead is my favorite drink. I love mead.
It's possibly your nichest personality trait is the fact that you just love mead.
I think there are quite a few niche personality traits that I've gathered over the years, but that's one of them. And I love mead. I love me some mead. That's what I miss the most about living in the northeast of England is being able to
buy the gallon.
Yeah, I've been into bars and I've asked for mead and they've looked at me like I'm crazy.
Jesus Christ. I think mead is disgusting, but
I say it's the oldest alcoholic drink, fermented drink in the world. Why do you not
have it? Do the bartenders just reply like, that's a niche personality trait?
Yeah, they're like, it's a pub, we sell beer, sometimes wine.
Jesus Christ, you're an idiot.
Yeah. And it's also considered the having bee. Oh, now I've forgotten the word, but people who have beehives is considered the second oldest profession in the world.
Oh.
What is the oldest? Yeah. What's the oldest? Prostitution. No.
Dora, okay. We know what the oldest one is. That was unspoken. We didn't need to.
No. Okay. Fine. To that. Fine.
And I mean, I've got just fact upon fact upon fact, and I'll pull out a fun one here. In Africa, in Kenya specifically, I think areas around Kenya, but Kenya was the one that popped up, they've actually got to keep elephants away. They make bee fences, which they place around the property to keep elephants away, and they have an 80% success rate.
How does that work? A fence of bees?
Well, so they have beehives placed at intervals around your property, and elephants don't want to pass.
Wow.
There's even, so this is turning into an episode about telling you how our history is so integral. There's even, in the Napoleonic era, it was very common to have family crests include bees, and I will just send you a little crest, Napoleonic crest, that involves bees, and that is actually very beautiful. The bee was a symbol of immortality and resurrection. Oh. It was chosen so as to link the new dynasty to the very origins of France. So it's got very, very powerful kind of metaphorical kind of symbolism. It's got lots of symbolism. Here's another one. I'll hit you up with another fact. And you guys can comment on all of these as we go through. But the European bee was brought over to North America by Shakers. Because of this, Native Americans refer to honeybees as white man's fly.
Whoa.
So it didn't actually exist. Yeah, I know. And here's a fun one. We're almost done with this, guys. I'm sorry. This is not just going to be a fact after
fact. I love
fact.
How passionate you are, though. Keep going.
Yeah. No, but it's good. Here's one for Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
In 1984, honeybees on a space shuttle constructed a honeycomb in zero gravity.
Whoa! Wow.
I know, and I've got a photo for you.
In the space shuttle. Wait, so they purposely brought bees up with them?
Yeah. Yeah. I believe, I might be wrong, but I believe it was a school experiment. It was like a, like a nominated school experiment.
That's so cool. Whoa.
It's like a special aluminium box they made for it. It's very intriguing. Cool.
Interesting that they just like were able to adapt to zero gravity and just still build their beehive.
Exactly. You were sort of perhaps hoping that they turned into kind of three-dimensional beehives because of it, like hexagons.
I
that
was
were
hoping
sort of
for some crazy, like, surreal.
But unfortunately, bees are just better than we are, and they went, okay, well, we'll just get to work then. Like,
we'll just do what we
usual.
Do every day. I'm in space, but whatever.
I bet they could do that in the vacuum of space. Like, yeah, whatever. Let's make a new house.
Yeah.
And the last fact on my list, which I collected when I was doing research, is I think this might be commonly known, but I thought it was really weird and I didn't know it. Honey made from rhododendron is poisonous.
I did know this, actually.
Whoa.
Yeah. Though rarely fatal, but it is
like you,
it is poisonous.
Like you'll be sick if you eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess the bee... What the bee? What do you call it? The bee.
But the bee doesn't get sick.
No, but the do you call farmer? No, not bee farmer.
Yeah. This was the word I was looking for.
An apiary.
The person who runs the apiary, but the
what is it called?
I don't know. The
beekeeper.
Beekeeper. Yeah. Fuck's sake.
Bee herder. You don't herd the bees.
The bee shepherd.
I'm guessing the beekeeper then like just makes sure there's none of those plants in the.
Rhododendrons. Yeah. Yes,
but
Lucas,
also,
you're
like,
right.
I think
he does make sure that there are no rhododendrons.
Like a little bit's probably all right. No, if they get a little bit and lots of other flowers.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure it's fine. But I mean, you tend not to have beehives in large rhododendron fields or anything like that.
Yeah.
Bees travel very, very far, so it would be impossible to stop a bee from.
Maybe there's like the. In the quality testing or something, they're like, oh, you can't be more than a percentage or something.
Yeah. Okay, so that's fact corner over.
Just blasting like... fact corner.
Yeah. I would like to... I've sort of had a little think about, well, okay, bees, they've had such an integrated part of our society. Clearly, we should have more bees. Mm-hmm. Around. In fact, I was on a call with one of the partners from the company I work with, and he has bees, and he was talking all about it, which I thought was really cool. He was saying how one of the hives has during winter, this is in the UK, the hive has 10,000 bees in it, just one hive, and during the summer it's got 50,000. So it fluctuates quite a lot, and bees don't either hibernate. They just sort of stand still. They just like slow down massively, and they'll even go for little flights now and then to clear out
to keep,
waste
keep
from.
Keep it up. Keep that
yeah.
Skill.
Well, they'll go for flights to defecate and to move rubbish out of the hive as well. So
they're
kind of
very tidy.
Yeah, they're incredibly tidy. They're very, very tidy, and they've got very specific roles within the hive as well. And you've got the queen, who's obviously a female. You've got the workers, who are female, and the drones, who don't even have stingers. They're just around to mate.
With the queen.
So, okay, so I started thinking, well, bees, they've had an, they're integrated in our history, but okay, well, let's have a little look at some art, you know?
Ooh.
And I found some beautiful, beautiful art, which has been produced around beehives, and I just wanted to share it with you, and we'll make sure this is accessible somewhere for people, Dora.
Yeah, but you've got to send me all these links.
So here is a picture. Lucas, can you explain what you see? What do you see? What do you see?
I see an elderly Lucas, is what I see.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's me at my avocado farm, but I also have some beehives.
Explain what you see, just seeing as this is an audio format.
I see an old man, apparently myself, reading a book of some sort, leaning against, looks like a bench, almost. But he's not sitting on the bench, he's sitting in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's warm, it's a happy summer day, and he's sitting in front of his beehives. Looks very peaceful.
Yeah, well, I think what's really, really interesting, and you'll see it in the other, I've got three pieces of art that I wanted to show you. Actually, I've got four pieces of art. There we go. What I think is really interesting about it is even though he's sitting next to lots and lots of beehives, mm-hmm. It's a very kind of natural scene.
Yeah.
It's very peaceful. It's incredibly idyllic.
Yeah.
He's so comfortable with nature, even though he's actually surrounded by more man-made structures than he is kind of mm-hmm. nature itself. I think it's really beautiful to kind of have think about how bees have, even then, are very much kind of linked to humans' involvement in keeping bees
mm-hmm.
and being part of their life. This piece of art is called A Beekeeper, and it's by Nikolai Bogatov from 1875. So it's Whoa. It's quite old. It's quite old.
Yeah, it's a really nice painting.
It's the most Whoa. Recent painting I've got in my
You're
list
taking there. This on a historical art journey.
I'm really digging this.
Yeah, oh! it's very yeah. beautiful, isn't it? So here's another one. I'm going to ask Dora to explain what you see.
Oh, God, okay.
This one's actually has a Swedish title. It's called Bee Gordon, which means the bee garden. Just before you explain it, Dora, it's by Ernst Abraham Josefsson.
It's actually very similar to the last one, I feel, the colours. Well, it's almost like a wooden structure, which has the hives in it, I guess. And it's sort of a summer day in a field, but there's no people in this one.
No. So again, it's this. I think it's really beautiful how it's picturesque. It's in a landscape of fields and trees, and I would presume from it having a Swedish name, and this was actually not from a Swedish website either, so so I don't actually know if it's really called... You know what? I might be just fact-checked on it, is what I'm saying. But I think it's really cool how, again, it's a kind of a man-made structure. It's very, very simple, kind of wooden box with beehives in it,
yeah.
And it just sits so beautifully in nature, and it doesn't look out of place. Even though it's man-made, it sits so... wonderfully in this kind of under a tree and in this field with a little
very pastoral
very pastoral like now this one's
like it's man-made yeah, but it's doesn't I don't know it doesn't feel like it's obviously for humans but not only like yeah I feel like it's almost like a birdhouse
you know yeah that you put it does on look the, like a birdhouse
it really yeah. fits in it's not disturbing anything
yeah and I think this is again just showing that kind of how humans can have a really integrated relationship to nature and can actually help nature along in a really kind of profound way. And I think bees tell that. I was very happy because I looked this up and I wasn't sure what to find when I looked up various pieces of art relating to beehives and things. But I just think it's really, really striking, actually, how kind of... it's from the 1800s as well, but just how again, it's yeah, so just this kind of pastoral relationship to nature,
yeah.
But through something that's man-made and through something that we've obviously created. I'm going to send you... I've got another one from the 1800s, actually. They're very typical, and I'm going to tell you why they're all from the 1800s. Dora will know why.
I really prefer these, like, old-school beehives instead of the ones I've seen, like, in person are just squares, kind of. It's very minimalistic, but I prefer these.
They look like mushrooms, don't they, in that first one?
Yeah. I really like those ones.
Well, this one will have sort of similar themes to the other two. And again, we'll reflect on why. Ooh. Lucas, can you sort of give us a little rundown? I'll just tell you what it's called. It's called, it's a German or German-speaking painting. It's by Hans Thomas, mm-hmm. and it's called Der Bienenfreund, which I presume means bee friend, I would assume, and it's from 1863.
Well, it's a man sitting on a bench in a bit of a wooded area, actually. It's not in a field anymore. It's next to a field, looks like. And in front of him, it's a beehive. Very similar to the one we just saw in the last painting. Very calm. He likes to be very close to his bees.
I'm a big fan of his billowing white shirt. Yes. I'd love a billowing white shirt like that.
I don't know. I think it's interesting that he's sitting there and just looking at it so, I don't know, intently.
Well, I think this is the last point that I've got 2 points more to make, but I think it's really interesting how in the first painting we looked at, the A Beekeeper by Nikolai Bogatov, mm-hmm. is how bees also sort of bring out kind of this sense of contemplation, mm-hmm. Of humbleness, of a sense of, you know, there are working bees and they can be watched and they've got their own life going, and humans can sort of actually gain quite a lot from just contemplating and watching mm-hmm. them do their thing. And they're also not aggressive animals either, unless you're, you know, touching their hives. And but he's just there and he's just watching it. He's got a book beside him. He's got a little coat. He's taking his coat off and he's just watching the bees. I think it's actually quite beautiful. And assuming that Bienenfreund means a friend of bees, I would also like to speculate that it shows that humans can be kind of friends from afar. Mm-hmm. The act of just watching them is being a friend of bees, and just allowing them to live and prosper is being a friend to bees. And what I was going to reflect on as well, with these also all being from the 1800s, from the 19th century, is that they are very, very picturesque, which is a movement very common for that time, where you've got all these kind of idyllic mm-hmm. images of nature and scenery.
Romantic.
It's Photoshop before Photoshop.
Well, sort of.
But isn't it when you were trying to make them, they weren't supposed to be realistic?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're right about that.
I learned something in school.
Yeah, I mean, these are relatively, I mean, they're realistic in the sense that there's a beehive and a person, look, you know, sitting next to it.
Yeah.
It's not unrealistic, but there's definitely a sense of kind of framing a idealized image of nature and man's place in nature, which I think is really beautiful.
Romanticized.
Yeah, romanticized for sure. So the last one, which is much older. It's 300 years older. Before Dora explains what it is, it's called The Beekeepers from 1568, and it's by Peter Bruegel the Elder.
Well, I guess they look almost like... It almost looks a bit science fiction, those masks. Mm-hmm. That's quite scary. They've got sort of bee hoods on, I guess. But I assume they're monks, are they?
I don't know if they're monks, but they could definitely be monks.
Maybe that's how everybody dressed back then. Well, I don't know what their stylistic choices are.
Beekeeper fashion.
What I think is interesting with this compared to the other ones is these are workers, right? They're almost abusing the bees or using the bees for their honey and their wax in a very different way from the other ones, where they're contemplating and it's in nature. This is very much utilizing them for what they produce.
Almost industrial.
And of course it's...
I'd argue that that's true of all of them there.
Yeah, that's true. We do use them, but there's definitely something much more...
Yeah, there's more people in this. It feels like they're all going somewhere. They've all got tasks.
Yeah.
I mean, this one, to me, is like almost off-putting in a way. It's a bit creepy, I guess. Something.
I think that's the hoods. They look like tree stumps.
Yeah. They look like tree stumps. And it's also the lack of color in the artwork as well.
It is unnerving.
Unnerving, that's a good word.
Have you noticed the little man sitting in the tree?
Yeah.
I have. He's my favourite part. But I don't think it's supposed to be unnerving. Like, I think that's just what they would have worn.
I mean, compared to the other ones.
Yeah, it's got a different vibe.
Definitely, cool. Yeah.
But even the way that the man is kind of ripping open the beehive and there's one cast aside,
mm-hmm.
I think sort of says...
Yeah.
You know, kind of a lack of respect and the fact that they're completely
covered. I don't
know, covered.
He might be building it. He might be crafting it.
Well, maybe, but I mean, look how covered they are. So they're obviously aware that they're causing aggression towards the bees or stressing the bees out.
Yeah.
Whereas the other one, there's a man just sitting in a shirt just watching the bees and he's, you know, not covered. He's just got a, you know, a very loose shirt on and is enjoying the bees and isn't afraid of the bees. And I think there's quite a big contrast between the
very big.
Second to last one I showed you and that one.
Yeah, none of the others had protective clothing on, did they?
No, they didn't have any protection like that.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm pleased you guys enjoyed it. Now for the obligatory David Attenborough section of the episode. And I have a little video for you. It's 4 minutes long. We're going to watch it, and we'll give commentary, and it will obviously be a link in the show notes.
As always,
I will post it here, and you guys can meet yourself and watch it. It's just a pleasant. It's just David Attenborough getting up to some David Attenborough shit.
Oh, you put it in the
eye. So just have a little watch of that, and we'll talk in 4 minutes or whatever.
So we watched a little David Attenborough video about giant honeybees. It would be here in the episode if BBC did allow us to have it here, but they have not responded in time, so to be sure, I'm not putting it in, but it was interesting. The bees were larger than, they're giant bees, you know, they're a bit bigger. David was also hoisted up into the tree with all the bees. And they specifically talked about how the bee colony defends itself from predators. Let's go back to us discussing the video.
That was very good.
It was worth it to see David Attenborough shimmy his way up a tree.
Yeah, that was when I started laughing. Sorry, that was...
Yeah,
it's very funny. Just
I love the beginning of the video because I'm sort of so used now to seeing David Attenborough, bless him, being an elderly gentleman,
mm-hmm.
and him in the beginning, him putting his leg up on that tree trunk,
yeah,
and posing.
It was
just sort of like
that's
he's had a life, hasn't he? He's had such a life.
But,
But yeah, what did you guys think? What did you guys think of the bees?
I enjoyed that. I was very nervous watching him zip up the bee suit whilst talking to the camera.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting that the beehive was actually like, they were on the outside.
Just bees, yeah.
Just like a big clump of bees.
It was a bit horror movie-y, if that's how bees would be.
Because you're seeing so many. At one time, you're like...
It's kind of like dripping from a tree.
Yeah, it's a bit intimidating like that. But I thought it was very fascinating, the warnings they did.
Oh, yeah, that was amazing. The wave.
The pattern.
Yeah.
Deter the
predators. I thought it was like... it was more like send a wave through the hive so they know, oh, it's a wasp or something. But it was more just like to make it harder for them to land.
Mm.
I thought it was just like sending a warning so every bee is ready, but no. That was not the case.
No,
that was
and
not the case.
I think it's really neat, and it kind of links up again to those pieces of art, which is that bees have a totally different kind of way of their senses and their way of interacting with the world is very different because, you know, when you have that moth that's trying to sort of land the bees aren't basing their defense on the fact that it looks different or is larger or anything like that. It's just the scent of it.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as that moth has a different scent, it can just sort of swoop into this.
I think, I'd say that.
This sea.
That unusual for animals.
No, perhaps not. But I just think it's just cool that it's... you know, it's a commodity, right? Honey and is a commodity,
even in the animal kingdom.
Exactly. And the way that they defend that is just from a very kind of different way from what we do, and that animals are willing to adapt so and taking such a big risk, and evolution has brought them to you know, be able to pick up different scents just to be able to get to this honey, which is so valuable, so much kind of nutrition. So yeah,
it's very interesting that like so many different species, I think I'm not 100% sure, but they want the honey, but the bees are just like, nah 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 nah, that's ours. We all like the honey.
I found that video. I think whenever we talk about nature, we should make sure we've got a little David Attenborough section.
Ah, yeah, of course.
Because David Attenborough makes my life so much better.
It's mandatory.
I've got something else juicy up my sleeve, but I just wanted to reflect now on, have I opened your mind to bees? How do you feel about bees right now?
I feel like I like them even more now. That's the first spontaneous thought. And I feel like I should, at some point in my life, have a beehive.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. At my summer house, or just my house, in my mandatory dungarees, of course.
Yes, yes.
And I can make my Lucas Dalarna honung.
Yeah, and I can come visit you.
And Aaron will brand the honey for you.
Aha, yes, he'll make a really nice logo.
It won't have hexagons. I hate hexagons.
I think if Lucas, if you have a beehive and you've got some dungarees, I think you need to commission a portrait.
I think
so
too.
Style of the 18th century.
I want a portrait of Lucas contemplating in front of some bees in the style of these pieces of art we've seen.
Exactly.
But how cool is that? Also, that the honeycombs, the hexagons, that they just make that and it looks like perfect, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
How do they do that?
The reason for it is it's mathematically the most amount of honey that they can fit into the least amount of material, i.e. the wax.
Yeah, because circles would be like, yeah, that would be more wax. Or no, not more wax than using hexagons.
Yeah.
How did they figure that out? What?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's mad. It's absolutely mad. Those little guys, I mean, they've got their own thing going. Like, humans are just going around ruining everything, and they've got their own life. They're just like little societies that do everything for each other.
I feel like I'm missing out. I wonder if at some point, like really far back in time, they weren't honeycombs. Or no, they weren't hexagons. Mm. They were some other shape before they evolved.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, it would make sense, I guess.
I assume so. I mean, they've been around for, I think it was, it was something nuts.
There were
like
bees in ancient Egypt, weren't there? They've been around.
Yeah. They've been around for absolutely ages. But yeah, obviously, evolution took a gradual kind of made some gradual moves, and they've ended up being what they are today. But yeah, I'm sure they did have very different shapes once upon a time. I know Dora has a book suggestion. I just know she does. So Dora, tell us what your book suggestion is.
I also want to say I've been on a beekeeping course.
Have you? Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great fun. I got to hold the little racks of bees. It was a really good experience. And I'm definitely gonna have bees in the future.
Did you get to scrape? Do the scrape?
Yeah, with the little scraper and the little smoke thing to get the bees to come and say hello. But then I think that's really stressed them out. But no, it was really good. Got all the gear, had all the gear on, the gloves, the netted hat. But yeah, I do have a book suggestion, which Aaron has read, I think.
Yeah, I've read it.
So I forced you to read it. It's just called The Bees. Just called The Bees, and it is honestly one of my favourite
books. Well, by which author?
It's by Lailene Paul, who she needs to write some more books. I've read two of her books. I think there are only books. She needs to write some more books, because she's great.
Did she write...
And what is it about?
Sorry, Lucas, what were you going to say?
Did she write two other books before this one in the same series called The Birds? And then also another book called And?
No, but her other book is called The Ice, which...
The Ice?
Yeah.
Well, Dora, tell us what makes the book special. Yeah. It's not just about bees.
So it's oh my God, I read it about 2 years ago. I need to reread it.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, it's got a very specific concept.
Right? It is. So. It's like you're inside a beehive and it basically follows the life of Flora 217. I don't know.
Whoa!
Or something. She's a bee and it's like what she gets up to and it's like a thriller. It's like
that's so
very
cool.
Exciting. So much happens.
Yeah, I remember it being incredibly well researched. It was like it wasn't like a children's book or anything like that. It was so well researched, but from the perspective of a bee and the tumult that a bee goes through. In a
but like I think like it's also like a lot of invented stuff around bees, but it is.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean it's fiction, of course, but it was very well researched fiction. About bees and the complex life
of
bees.
I mean, I highly recommend it. I think it's one of the best books in the world.
I mean, I love the concept already. I'm just in love with the idea. I'm just imagining the struggles that a bee faces in life.
I want to correct myself. It's Flora 717. It follows Flora.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. We can recommend that very much. I really enjoyed the book as well when I read it. So, okay.
And I don't read books, so I have obviously not read it. Okay.
Okay. Quiz time. Cue music, Lucas.
Oh, my God. I thought we'd finished. Okay.
It's quiz time.
It's quiz time.
Is it Lucas's quiz?
No, it's my quiz.
I
it's
haven't
my quiz.
Made one because okay. I hope Aaron's made one because I sure
I've
haven't.
Made one.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. Everybody, I will ask one of you to guess a number or guess an answer. When it comes to a number, when it's a quantitative number, and one of you will say higher and one of you will say lower. And,
we won't say, the other one won't say a number, they will just say higher or lower.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're going to get ridiculous answers. So, right. in 2 months, how far would a bee fly?
I don't know. I think I'm going to go too big.
I feel like I'm going to go with 7 mil, whatever that is. So that's 70 kilometers.
Okay, so 70 kilometers.
Okay, like right. I was definitely going more than that. I was going more like a couple hundred kilometers.
Okay. Well, so you didn't listen to my rules of the game, but Dora clearly said higher. And actually, it's a bit sad now, really, because... Well, actually, to be honest with you, Lucas, you are bang on the buck.
What?
I would
really?
Say.
Wow. It is,
so in 2 months, in 68 weeks, a worker bee will fly the equivalent of the distance of 1.5 times the circumference of the Earth. And the Earth has a circumference of...
Wait, what number did Lucas say?
He said 70,000.
Oh.
And the circumference of the Earth is 40,000 kilometers.
Okay, no, I'm not with this at all. I thought he said 70 kilometers.
Yeah, that's what I said.
I was going more than that.
You said 70 kilometers.
I was way off.
That's what I'm confused about.
Oh, shit. I thought you said...
Do I win?
Yeah, you win, definitely. Sorry.
I said like 1% of what they actually fly, so never mind.
Sorry. I was looking at the numbers and okay. You're not bang on the buck at all, Lucas. That was very, very wrong.
Bang on off the buck.
Christ, I thought that was going to be super impressive if Lucas just knew that.
a worker bee will fly the circumference of 1.5 Earths.
Okay, I'm
months.
Impressed. I wasn't impressed with 70 kilometers, but I am impressed.
It will fly 60,000 kilometers.
That's insane.
In 2 months. Nuts, right? Nuts.
I mean, I guess it... Because they can't carry that much. They have to fly and then fly back and then fly again and fly back. That's a lot of flying. I guess there's more flying than pollinating.
Well, it's absolutely crazy, I think. It's absolutely crazy. So, okay, next question. Doodle-doo. How much honey does a bee produce in a lifetime? This is one of those facts I hear occasionally, but I'd like to hear a guess unless you know the answer. Let's put it this way. How many teaspoons of honey?
Okay, fine. 7?
I'm going to ask higher.
Okay, 1/12 of a teaspoon.
1/12?
Wow.
1/12 of a teaspoon in its
Think
whole
about all life. Those bees that go into your honey, Lucas, and you're just shoveling it in by the spoonful out of the jar.
I'm eating like 1,000 bees in just 5 spoons. Not that I take 5 spoons when I eat honey, but yeah.
I mean, in fairness, not that it makes the situation better, but a bee doesn't live very long. A worker bee doesn't live very long. So it's, you know, it's a lot of...
I wasn't calling them lazy and unproductive.
But they still have time to fly 1.5 times the circumference of the Earth.
Here we go. Next question. Which Greek god is credited with being the first beekeeper?
Demeter? I'm going to say
Demeter. Is it one of the main ones?
Yeah, it's one of the main ones.
Hera.
Okay, well, you're both wrong.
Zeus.
He is the son of Zeus. It is Apollo.
Apollo. Whoa.
Yeah, god of sun, poetry, music, archery, medicine, and healing. And bees. Well, he's the first beekeeper. He's not necessarily the god of bees. Okay, next one. This one you probably won't get, but it's more of a fact. Which female name is derived from the honeybee?
Flora?
Bitch. What? I don't know.
No, it's Melissa, derived from the Greek word for honeybee. So whenever you see somebody called Melissa, it's derived from the Greek word for honeybee.
And I'll go, sup, queen? Pollination!
It's a good chat-up line for any Melissas out there.
Okay, and the final question in my quiz. Get ready. And if you can name this, you get double points. You get double points. Okay. Which... five substances do bees produce? Five main substances. And I'll let you even work together. How about that? You
guys have to come up with five?
So the obvious one I'll start you off is honey. Honey is one of them.
Wax. They make the wax, don't they? And mm-hmm. they make propolis. I know that one.
Yeah.
Wait, we have three now?
Done three.
So
I don't know any more, to be
honey,
fair.
Honey, wax, and whatever that last one was.
But I feel like I should know more.
There's one more obvious one, or sort of, you know, one that's commonly sort of...
Hexagons, which isn't a substance.
Hexagons.
But they...
they create the art of hexagons. Okay, well, the five substances, the distinct substances that you can harvest as a human from a beehive is honey, beeswax, propolis, good one, does. Pollen.
Oh, I nearly said pollen and I panicked.
And then the last one is royal jelly.
Royal jelly. They were all obvious.
It's a substance, so...
that's the stuff they give to the queen.
Yeah, so the queen bee, and only the queen, eats royal jelly for the duration of her life. This milky substance is produced in a special gland located in the worker bee's head. It's a very sort of intense, milky substance.
You can find it
in lots of beauty products and stuff.
That's amazing that they can make five things. I can't produce that many substances.
Yeah. We can't produce anything.
No,
Yeah,
Lucas has produced five songs his whole life. Yeah. He's just stuck. He just can't make the fifth. Okay, bees use propolis, a sticky substance gathered from the buds of trees to fill in cracks and weatherproof their hives. Mm. That's what propolis
is. But they also use it, I think, if like a creature gets in, like say...
as a trap.
A mouse. Like if a mouse came in somehow, they can mummify it in the propolis so that it doesn't infect the hive.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Oh, that's cool. That's a fun fact. You get, you know, I bounce one fact at you and you just bounce one right back at me. So bees create wax in a special gland on their stomach, which they then chew to form honeycomb.
Okay.
Right, okay, yeah.
And that's the end of my quiz. So I think...
Yeah, Dora definitely won. I didn't get anything right. I said
it started off with a false start for Lucas.
I mean, I did do really well on the last quiz, so I think it's good that I didn't do it this time.
Yeah, you won denim for sure.
Yeah, but the listeners are going to start to think I'm cheating if I don't lose every once in a while.
Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah, and let's be clear, he does cheat.
Well, okay, technically, I almost cheated on the Greek god question because I googled Greek gods, but it didn't help. So
yeah, I googled Greek gods and I still couldn't even find Apollo on the bloody list.
I saw Apollo. I was like, no, that's the space god. But it's the other way around, obviously.
Hey, but we've had bees in space, so it's gone full circle.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true. That's very true.
It's good stuff. Enjoyed that.
We enjoyed that. We enjoyed that episode.
It's just made me want to go out and like look at some bees. It's not summer though. I just want it to be a nice summer day so I can.
Well, you want to contemplate like one of those guys.
I want the shirt. I want the white billowy shirt. I just want to sit with a nice breeze.
Oh, you meant the paintings.
Yeah, the paintings. Oh, I have a little fun fact that I missed that I'm just going to lay on you.
Ooh.
Oh, this is good. This is good. We're going to finish off the episode with this one. The word honeymoon is derived from the ancient tradition of supplying a newlywed couple with a month's supply of mead in order to ensure happiness and fertility.
On your wedding, you're going to fully reinstate that policy. And you're going to expect gifts of mead.
It's going to be like on the invitation.
Yep.
You actually won't be let in if you do not bring me gifts of mead.
The problem is, I think it requires like immense amounts of mead to sustain Aaron.
Yeah, I know, it does.
It's going to be very expensive.
Well, this is the thing, month supply, you know, what does that really mean?
Is it for drinking just on Friday evenings, or it's just like, how much can Aaron consume in 1 month?
Have you found some over in Sweden? Are you drinking it?
No. There is apparently there's really good mead out in, on Gotland.
You hear rumours of the good mead. You're just trying to track it down.
Lucas, have you tried mead?
I really like it, but it's hard to come across. So I'm kind of in the same situation.
Yeah.
I think it's disgusting.
What?
It's my verdict.
There was this really good company in Durham, which sold sparkling mead, and it was done in like a champagne fashion. It was incredible. So it was like sort of champagne, but it had so much more depth than that dirty champagne. And it was a little bit sweet.
I feel like you're aggravating our champagne listening residents today.
Yes. Well, champagne and caviar, everybody. Champagne and caviar. Okay. Thanks very much for a delightful episode.
Nice episode.
Yeah, I've got to go. There's stuff to do. Bye.
All right, boys and girls. Bye-bye.
Jag saknar dig så jävla mycket. Jag sitter och tänker på mig just nu.
Jag ser dig till och med just nu faktiskt.